Good morning, and thank you for listening to 2AIM, as we do once a month. I'm Paul Tolley, and I have the Mayor of Armidale, Mr. Sam Copeland, in the studio to have a chat. Good morning, Sam.
Good morning, Paul. Great to be here.
And it's an appropriate time always, because it's just after you've had your meeting.
Yes.
Big meeting. Let's start off with just an informational one. The property, a horrible name, the property and address and naming our roads and places policy, deep breath and register of pre-endorsed road and place names. People had an opportunity to recommend different place names, I believe, or put different place names on a register. Do you know how this is going to work? Does council look at it and make a decision, or who makes a decision?
We do have an internal group that do that. So that particular policy was on public exhibition, which has come off now. It'll be adopted because we wouldn't not have received any submissions. But there we go. But that's just around the policy. So that's probably a good thing in that the policy was well written. The actual mechanic of people, I'd be writing into council at armidale.nsw.gov.au. So that would be the filter, or you always go to the front desk. So,
and I think there were really two reasons for this. It gives people the opportunity to suggest the name of a prominent person, perhaps for a street name or a place name, but it also gives an opportunity to revisit some of those names which have perhaps were fine in the 1880s, yeah, but don't meet current expectations.
Yeah, that's true. The cultural zeitgeist moves a bit.
Yeah, and culture always changes and moves, yeah, doesn't it?
It does. So I think, look, it's a good thing to do. Personally, I think there should be a little bit of a time limit on naming any, say, structure, bridge, dam, road, after individuals. Maybe, you know, give them 30 years. But we're going to run out of bridges, dams, roads for all the prominent people or those that do good. If they've all been bags.
And I think your point is it gives an opportunity for anything to come out to the public that wasn't known. And Rolf Harris in Australia is always the classic example,
yeah,
isn't he?
Exactly.
30 years gives an opportunity to prevent mistakes, another mistake being made, perhaps.
That's true.
No, indeed. The mayoral and councillors' remuneration has come up, and there is a proposal that councillors get an increased, do you call it a wage, or is it, I don't quite know the description.
It's our remuneration.
Yep.
Yes.
And given the rate increases, timing can't be good for council on this one.
Look, optically, timing can't be good. That's true. There is a state government remuneration tribunal, and their determination was that this is across New South Wales, that council could increase their remuneration by 3%.
Yep.
So for the average councillor, that's about $750 a year or $14 a week. Having been on council, I realise, and this is something I take a real stand against, the whole fairly poorly informed councillor bashing, you know, from those that sit on the sidelines. Having been one that's in the trenches, I think councillors are very underpaid. I'm not doing it for the money. Most of my fellow councillors aren't either. It is a community service, but community service cuts a few different ways. So, yes, an extra
the point 700 to make, however, is that councils don't have to accept it.
That's true.
So Armidale Council will
Armidale Council voted last night to accept it.
So you have accepted it.
Yes.
All right. I mean, the timing can be an issue, but I guess we've talked about the 50% rate increase, another thing, and I'll point it out. To be fair, I'll point it out again. Then you pointed it out, I think, 2 weeks ago, that this is not across the board. This does not cover 50% of your total wages. It's the major component, but it's not the whole thing. But it's going to be hard for people. You always see it in Canberra when there are suggestions that federal politicians salaries should go up. It's always difficult at a time when council is asking ratepayers to pay more money.
Look, possibly. I also think that's a pretty cheap view, truth be told. This is 3%. It's a fairly low amount. We're going to be down two councillors next council term. And Yeah, if people are going to go backwards, then you're going to struggle to get people.
But you and I both know that politics is so much about optics and so much about the art of the policy, the possible, and this is the way people view it. And these things give the naysayers an opportunity. It gives them something to grab hold of. But you know that as well as I do.
Of course I do, and I think that's always going to be there. But I also think it's time we called people on that. Mm-hmm. You know, it's time to be a little bit more grown up. I think one of the worst examples of virtue signalling happened in New Zealand. Jacinda Ardern said, "Oh, look, we will take a 50% pay cut over here during COVID, go out in sympathy." Now, she may very well have been in a position to take that 50% pay cut. There's a very high likelihood a lot of her fellow politicians weren't in a financial position to do that, but now the pressure's on you to do it. So it becomes a bit of a race to the bottom.
But Sam, I'm going to point out that even using the term virtue signalling is a signal in itself, isn't it?
It's a
term that carries a lot of baggage.
It certainly does. Anyway, I would be delighted. Here's my invitation. If someone has a genuine beef with the councillors going up by $750 a year, come in and see me. Sit down and we'll have that discussion. Don't be the keyboard warrior. Come in and see me. My door is always open.
I have to agree with that. I've seen it when I was working in media experience that I also don't like people who hide behind the keyboard. I actually had an experience. I had to get police assistance because a listener was hiding behind a bush out the front of my house and tracking me, so you and I both.
Anyway, I'll take down those that have all the good ideas. I'll be taking their names down and hoping that and looking forward to seeing their name on the ballot paper at the next council election in September next year.
Any updates on the Gyra demerger application?
No, because we didn't put the Gyra demerger application in. I only heard on someone mentioned it to me that appeared on Facebook that the Save and Grow Gyra group have put their application in, so more power to them.
That's who we are at the moment.
Yeah.
All right, the rail trail is being discussed more. I'm quite surprised that the passions that this is raising in people and it's what's happening in the town, and I've noted that there's a Trains North group has formed. Is council taking a firm position around this as yet?
Look, there's hype, there's make-believe, and there's reality. So council's position is, it's been a council position for 2 years or so now, this is following a council resolution, to seek funding to progress the rail trail. And we've received some funding. We have then taken some of the planning documents and put them before the Public Works Authority for the business case, etc., to be reviewed. And Public Works Authority are yet to come back with their final report. And that'll talk about where is the funding best applied, how should the trail be constructed, and we go from there. The train group are very active on social media. But I've said this before, for trains to come north, you need two essential ingredients. For that railway line to be re-established, you need two essential ingredients, and that is state government money and state government will. Neither of those are on the table.
At present, I mean, my point of view on this is really an economic one, and the line south to Sydney, and particularly through the Hawkesbury area, is not adequate for freight movement, hence a lot of trucks on the New England Highway and on the Coast Road, of course. If in the future, if the Inland Rail is built, it seems to me the logical movement of freight by rail would be to the Inland Rail depot in Brisbane, and that seems to me a sensible approach. However, I am also aware, and I think that's why you're pointing to the state government, that to rejuvenate that strip of land as a rail link is going to be very, very expensive.
Yeah. It is. And look, even the enthusiastic rail supporters acknowledge that it's unlikely to happen in the next 30 years.
My other question, and I don't know, as I haven't been able to find out, is would it be possible to link to the Inland Rail through the Werris Creek line? Because it seems to me that giving Armidale, Tamworth and the New England a link to the Inland Rail, if and when it comes off, would be a valuable thing. And that's probably my one concern about the rail trail, which I think different from that of most people who are talking about it, yeah. In actual fact.
I think there's a lot more to it as well. In New England, we don't really produce bulk goods that go by rail.
Except for the wool clip, and that's not all year round.
That is not all year round, no. And it's actually reducing. This region 30, 40 years ago would have been sheep everywhere, but now we're black cattle everywhere. Just to come back to this, though, the way that the legislation, and this is where there's misinformation out there, the way the legislation is written is that the rail corridor would be repurposed. It remains the remains in ownership of Transport for New South Wales. It would be a lease to council for the rail trail. If at any stage the state government wishes to reclaim the...
Repurpose.
Yeah, just turn it back into a rail corridor, they can go for it. It is the absolute best solution. I realise that what it would mean, what the rail trail would mean is the end of a dream for some people. And that is the reality. I am not somebody who's going to sit here and just let that, because trains won't be coming back for 30 years, at least, if at all. So we have 34 years of lost opportunity since that line closed. I don't think we're any closer to it coming back. So in the interim, if it does come back, we need to do something about it. It is not, and I've said this before, and this really needs to be lodged in people's minds, it is not a choice between trains and bikes, because trains are not the option. It is bikes or blackberries. And to say otherwise, you're being either willfully ignorant or... This is something that just annoys me because...
I can see that.
It is just a ludicrous argument.
There's another interesting point as well, and that is that we're seeing an upward trend in the uptake in Australia of electric vehicles. We're seeing enormous research and work being done around the world on aeroplanes, rechargeable aeroplanes. I haven't actually read anything about trains, and I would suspect that in 30 years' time, if trains, we have electric trains on urban networks, but that's an entirely different thing. It'd be interesting to see in 30 years if we actually have trains that are not using diesel, because I think in the next possibly decade anyway, those questions and those equations are going to come into play as well, aren't they? I don't know if anyone's talking about that, but it strikes
Look,
me as being
that's
a
true.
Case.
So what you're talking about there really is the operational aspect.
Yes, I am.
Of trains. When we're talking about rail trail versus bringing the trains back, it's a capital aspect.
Yes, I understand.
So the cost of reinstating a train line built in the 1800s is going to be in excess of $1 billion, I'd imagine.
And the majority of those bridges, look, I've driven up it,
well,
are not suitable for use at the moment.
There's the size of trains has differed. Anyway.
Moving on. I don't think I asked you last time, but any updates on the Kempsey Road?
It's a work in progress and will be for about 3 years. So we have the steering committee meeting every month. That includes people from Transport for New South Wales, contractors involved, state government, etc., to make sure that we are on track with that. It's a huge project. There is $407 million has been allocated to repair that road. This is one of those things people say, well, what about the risk to council if it blows out? The cost is the cost. It's coming in, there's about a 30% margin built into that.
A contingency margin.
A contingency is built into it. There is no money to go beyond. So the actual cost is going to be around 300-ish million, about $100 million for contingencies, but that's it.
And it's a road like the road from Walker down to Port Macquarie. It's always going to require, because of the country it traverses, yes, it's always going to require maintenance, isn't it?
It is. And it's probably even worse, the way that it was built. And again, this is one of the downsides of where you're trying to utilise something that was built in the late 1800s, early 1920s. Mm-hmm. You know, the where it has failed is at the base of the big mountain that sort of drops straight down into the river. So
it's
there's a dirt road along the river that is always getting wet, rarely sees sunshine. And it's unsealed. So there's a hell of a lot of work there.
We talked previously about the Oakey River Dam project and the pipeline. Any update on funding for since we last spoke?
No, there isn't. The engineering works and the tender documents are still being prepared. We're still speaking with the state government around the funding from their Safe and Secure Water funding, Safe and Secure Water funding to get that that rebuilt, but that's sort of contingent on the engineering works, etc., etc. So we know exactly how much we are seeking.
All right. Now the last one, and I know this is dear to your heart, the APVMA, the flagging of a possible move that was moved up by Barnaby when he was minister from Canberra to Armidale. There are now rumblings about a possible move again, and you've come out fairly forcefully on this one. I could quote you, but you can quote yourself.
Well, if I've got some good quotes you've got there, please remind me. This is a terrible. The prospect of the APVMA being relocated back to Canberra, I think, is just a terrible thing. It really appears that there's a political football game being played, and that to me just isn't good enough. So what we've got is that there was a report done by Clayton Utz. And Clayton Utz is one of the largest law firms in Australia.
Indeed, yeah.
That to me is a red flag. We've had the minister come out and say there's a secondary
Murray review. Watt.
Murray Watt. This is the agriculture minister. Murray Watt has come out and said he is commissioned a second review based on what Clayton Utz found by a former senior public servant called Ken Matthews, and he's asked for a rapid review that will report back by the end of September, at which point Murray Watt, the Minister for Agriculture, will make a determination as to what's to happen with the APVMA. To me, that sounds like weasel words. We've got a government hiding behind consultants and external advisors. Now, I work in this space. If you engage the likes of Clayton Utz, they're a law firm. They're looking for problems. They'll find problems because you've paid them hundreds of thousands of dollars to find problems. It was a desktop review as well. So that to me sets off alarm bells. If you engage Clayton Utz to find problems, they're also going to find loopholes for you to do something different. If you want to fix a problem, you don't engage Clayton Utz.
Interesting. I was talking with a friend of mine who previously worked at Macquarie Bank and got himself involved in a number of these things, and he and I was asking him a few questions, and he made a similar comment about the engagement of lawyers in this. But let's go to a few of the things you said. You said if you strip 150 jobs out of Armidale, that's going to have a massive knock-on effect. If you apply an economic multiplier, that could be in the region of $45 million in economic activity stripped out of our community every year. Are those figures accurate?
They're solid guess. Let's say they're directionally correct. So if we have 150...
I think 150 is a little high, isn't it?
There might be. I thought there were 135 people here, but
the numbers
bandied about by the politicians were 150. So I leapt on that. I assumed if there was an average salary,
a few less. Yeah.
If there were an average salary of $100,000, That's 15 million. The multiplier effect of money through a, you know, circulating through an economy is about three times. So that's why I said that would be $45 million coming out. What really concerns me, though, and maybe just to come back to a bit, just to put a bit more juice into this discussion, there is nothing precluding Murray Watt, the Agriculture Minister, from confirming that APVMA will stay in Armidale. He can do that before a review, and then he can fix the culture. The culture is the problem, not the location. So service organisations such as APVMA, COVID has proved this, are location agnostic. You can be based anywhere. And Armidale is the perfect place for it. We're an educated...
But in a sense, you're arguing against the original move.
But that's correct. That,
because, I mean, you made another point and said not play fast and loose with people's lives and livelihoods. Mm. That was exactly the argument used by all the staff, the majority of staff who couldn't leave Canberra when the move took place because they had kids in schools and they owned houses.
I think the answer is wouldn't leave because there are houses in Armidale and there are schools in Armidale. So, but just to that point, it's then even... If that's your the only argument because it was badly done before, well, now it's just insultingly cheap to say we can unscramble this omelet.
Now, my argument is merely that the same language applies to both, and your argument will obviously be, I'm not putting words in your mouth, but this is the reality today in 2003. But I am just making the point that the same argument did apply.
Yeah, sure, but I'm not going to unscramble that omelette. I need to deal, as you said, with the here and now. Here in 2023, APVMA is located in Armidale. To uproot it, to me, just smacks of political opportunism. And what we need to do is put that aside, because one thing I have said, and I'll bang on about it before, the minister should not be playing fast and loose with people's lives and livelihoods. If that happened in the past, we're not squaring the ledger.
So what do you think, Murray, in your mind, not speaking for him, in your mind, what do you think his motivation would be for moving it back to Canberra? Do you have I'm not asking you to put words in his mouth. I've worded that very carefully.
I honestly don't
know. What do you think is the basis of... I mean, we know there are cultural problems. We know that people were meeting in McDonald's in the early days. I've spoken to people who work there. We know that the place... we know urinating on fellow staff members is obviously huge... Mm. Huge cultural issues in that organisation, and I think probably because a lot of cultural knowledge... was lost when it moved from Canberra.
Well, that's what they say. But let's break that down. So, firstly, culture and urinating on people. That's not something we do in Armidale. That's an individual failing.
Yes,
that is a failure.
But cultural, but organisational culture, does come from the top. We all know that. But also, it has to be supported from underneath. And if we have an organisation where somebody feels that they can do that or get away with it, or they won't even lose their job, then it does point to some sort of cultural.
I'm not doubting there is any cultural problem, but culture has to be distinct from location.
Indeed.
Cultural improvement and cultural change.
No, you're right, but I'm just saying that the cultural, I think there was a loss of organisational cultural knowledge with the move. I'm not arguing even for or against the move. I'm just discussing what happens in organisations at that level, having worked for some.
Yeah, it does. But cultural change and cultural improvement are the central tenets of management thinking and have been for 90 plus years. Mm-hmm. So this is not new. It's not unsolvable.
I've actually done a postgraduate.
Oh, there we go.
Organisational systems analysis.
Well, there you are, Paul. There could be a role for you at the APVMA. There might be a few offices freed up.
And risk management.
Excellent. My view is don't take it out of Armidale, because other organisations here don't have those problems. It is an organisation specific cultural issue that can be fixed. If anyone needs to move, put a couple of highly paid mandarins up here for 2 years to sort it out. The move back to Canberra is... The potential move back to Canberra just smacks of political opportunism and getting square, and I think that's disgusting.
And at a meta... Can I just say, sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but at a meta level, the history of Australia shows we go from decentralisation back to centralisation, and it's like a bellows that moves back and forth. So acknowledging that, what your bottom line argument for keeping it in Armidale would be?
Would be 150 jobs. So for us, that is material. In Canberra, 150 jobs is a drop in the ocean. So it's set up here. Don't unscramble the omelette, and all will be good. But this is not something I'm going to lie down on. In fact, we're just getting ramped up. And the minister has a very, very easy out. He can fix the problems at the APVMA whilst also preserving jobs, livelihoods and sanity in a regional community. We can't have this re-centralisation. It would be the thin end of the wedge, and I suspect he will find many country mayors and many regions very angry if this happens.
I've been talking with the Mayor of Armidale, Mr. Sam Copeland. Sam, thank you very much, as always, for coming and chatting with us. We'll talk to you again in a month's time.
Excellent. Thanks, Paul.